Orville Freestone Jr., Sunday PM, January 6th, 2013.
Last month, we learned that the Lord is our provider. So we find the next compound title for God in the 17th chapter, or 15th chapter rather, of Exodus. God, our provider, you remember, was when Abraham offered up his son Isaac, and the Lord did provide a sacrifice. So the next name is in Exodus chapter 15 and verse 26. And he, the Lord, said, if thou wilt diligently hearken to the voice of the Lord thy God, and will do that which is right in his sight, and will give ear to his commandments, and keep all his statutes, I will put none of these diseases upon you which I brought upon the Egyptians, for I am the Lord that healeth thee. This story is set in the Sinai Peninsula, which has been very much in the news of late if you've been following the events in the Middle East. And Sinai is a very important place. The Israelis took it in the Six-Day War, and they gave it back to Egypt on the basis of a peace treaty with Egypt. And if Egypt, as has been threatened now by the new regime, threatens to abrogate that peace treatment, they better think twice. Israel might just want the Sinai back again as a bargaining chip. But this is set in the time of the Exodus, in the 14th chapter of Exodus. The angel of the Lord in the pillar of cloud and fire led the Israelites through the Yam Suf. We call it the Red Sea. It was an arm of the Red Sea, but Yam Suf really means the Reed Sea. So if you can think of a place that's pretty deep, but grows a lot of reeds that grow to be 15 to 20 feet high, why, you'll get the picture. And in the 15th chapter, we read the Song of Moses, one of the first full psalms recorded in the Bible. And it was a psalm of praise and thanksgiving. And, well, let's just read part of that. Then sang Moses and the children of Israel this song. Evidently, it was a responsive song. And spake, saying, I will sing unto the Lord, for he hath triumphed gloriously. For the horse and his rider hath he thrown into the sea. And the Lord is my strength and song, and he has become my salvation. He is my God, and I will prepare for him an habitation. My father's God, and I will exalt him. The Lord is a man of war. The Lord, or Jehovah, is his name. Pharaoh's chariots and his host hath he cast into the sea. His chosen captains also are drowned in the Red Sea, or the Yam Suf. The depths have covered them. They sank into the bottom as a stone. Thy right hand, O Lord, is become glorious in power. Thy right hand, O Lord, hath dashed in pieces the enemy. And in the greatness of thine excellency thou hast overthrown them and rose up against thee. Thou sendest forth thy wrath, which consumed them as stubble. And with the blast of thy nostrils the waters were gathered together, and the flood stood upright as an heap. and the depths were congealed in the heart of the sea. Sounds like ice, doesn't it? The enemy said, I will pursue, I will overtake, I will divide the spoil. My lust shall be satisfied upon them. I will draw my sword, my hand shall destroy them. Thou didst blow with thy wind, the sea covered them. They sank as lead in the mighty waters. Who is like unto thee, O Lord, among the gods? Who is like unto thee, glorious in holiness, fearful in praises and doing wonders? None of the pagan gods, incidentally, were holy. Thou stretchest out thine right hand, the earth swallowed them. Thou in thy mercy hast led forth the people which thou hast redeemed. Thou hast guided them in thy strength and in thy holy habitation. The people shall hear and be afraid. Sorrow shall take hold upon the inhabitants of Palestina. That's liable to happen again here pretty soon. Then the dukes of Edom shall be amazed, and the mighty men of Moab trembling shall take hold upon them, and all the inhabitants of Canaan shall melt away. Fear and dread shall fall upon them. By the greatness of thine arm they shall be as still as a stone, till thy people pass over, O Lord, till the people pass over which thou hast purchased. Thou shalt bring them in and plant them in the mountain of thine inheritance, in the place, O Lord, which thou hast made for thee to dwell in the sanctuary, O Lord, which thy hands have established. The Lord shall reign forever and ever, for the horse of Pharaoh went in with his chariots and with his horsemen into the sea. Pretty smart thing to do, wouldn't you think? And the Lord brought again the waters of the sea upon them, but the children of Israel went on dry land in the midst of the sea. And here I think is where we see that it was a responsive psalm, because in verse 20 we read, and Miriam the prophetess, the sister of Aaron, took a timbrel in her hand, and all the women went out after her with timbrels and with dances. And Miriam answered them, sing ye to the Lord, for he hath triumphed gloriously. For the horse and his rider hath he thrown into the sea. So Moses brought Israel from the Red Sea. So this was a time of celebration for the people of Israel. They had just witnessed a very great miracle. They had just experienced a very great deliverance. They had just learned that their God was able to take care of them, I think. And what happens usually after a revival? Isn't there a letdown? So Moses said in verse 22, enough already. So Moses brought Israel from the Red Sea, and they went out into the wilderness of Shur. And they went 3 days into the wilderness and found no water. Wouldn't you know it? A time of trouble following a time of joy. Now, this wilderness of Shur is the desert in the northwest part of the Sinai Peninsula, on the eastern shore of what is today the Suez Canal, as it goes up to meet the Mediterranean, not very far out of Canaan, out of Egypt. And they went 3 days' journey into the wilderness. Wilderness in the Bible means desert. When you read desert in the Bible, it means wilderness. Just the opposite of what we would do today. Because they called this a wilderness, the King James translators did, because there were no people living there. And the King James Version calls the very lush valley of Galilee, up against the rise of the highlands on the eastern shore. He calls that a desert because it was deserted. So they went 3 days' journey into this wilderness of Shur. Now, travelers in the recent centuries traveling in that area, and with ways of travel not too distant from the Israelites in the 18th and 19th centuries, they said that this is a very, very hot, bleak desert. It's not a sandy desert, which would be a relief. It's a stony desert. The stones hold the heat, and they're hot to walk on, and they, all of them in their journey, walked. They walked. Their children either walked or were carried, and they drove their sheep along with them. So picture that crowd now going out into that desert. And one of the travelers who led a scientific survey for the British government in the 19th century said that journeying that way, that they could average 15, maybe 20 miles a day by really pushing it. So 3 days' journey would take them about 40 miles from where they crossed the Red Sea out into this desert. Now, the people complained that Moses brought them out into the desert to kill them of thirst. They weren't saying that when they got across the Red Sea, were they? But circumstances change, and people are fickle. So they were complaining about it. But I don't think they had very much to complain about, because do you remember the pillar of cloud and fire? You remember how it led them? It went before them, and the angel of the Lord was in that pillar, and how he looked out from that pillar and scared the Egyptians out of their wits. Well, that pillar was also a cloud over the whole group of the whole host of Israel. So we read that it was a pillar of, it was fiery at night, and it was cloudy by day. It was fiery at night, not from fire, but from the Shekinah glory of God. So there they were, traveling underneath this cloud, going out into this wilderness. And as any sensible person does in that area, because that desert is every bit as hot, dry and bleak as the Sahara, of which it is but the extension beyond the Red Sea. So they were walking under the cloud, and the pillar was leading them as they went. So the cloud would protect them from the heat of the sun by day, and the fiery cloud would give them light to travel by night. And any sensible person in that area does his traveling by night, even if he's going by camels. So by night, they had their light to travel and see where they were going. By day, they had the cloud overshadowing them, protecting them from the heat of the sun. So they really didn't have a lot to complain about the conditions of their travel. But these modern travelers said that traveling 3 days in the same conditions that the Israelites did, they came to a saline spring. He was about 15 to 20 feet in diameter, circular in form, and it was so salty that their camels wouldn't even go near it. And they analyzed the waters of this spring, and I don't remember exactly, but there were 8 or 9 different salts, sodium chloride, calcium chloride, and so forth, several different chlorides, 8 or 9 of them in this water, making it absolutely putrid. And this is where they came, and they'd been, their water that they had brought with them from Egypt was now gone. And of course, Moses brought them out to die of thirst. So the people murmured, and they came to Marah. Marah in Hebrew means bitterness. And this was not what the Egyptians called this place, it's what the Israelites called this place, Lake Marah, or Spring of Marah. And when they came to Marah, they could not drink of the waters of Marah, for they were bitter. Therefore the name of it was called Marah. And the people murmured against Moses, saying, "What shall we drink?" It was a perfectly obvious answer to that question. They had nothing to drink. And he cried unto the Lord, and the Lord showed him a tree. Now, if you're reading in the NIV, you will read, "And the Lord showed him a piece of wood." The Hebrew word means either a piece of wood or a woody tree or bush. And there is a woody bush that can grow into a small tree in that desert yet today that surrounds salt springs. It seems to like salty water, rather like those salt cedars that we so intelligently brought from Siberia to plant along all of the streams of the West so that it could drink up all the water in the springs and we wouldn't have any put in our reservoirs. That was real smart. Well, that's the kind of a tree or wood that would grow here. And the Lord showed Moses a tree or a piece of wood. It doesn't say he cut down the tree, but he could have, which when he had cast it into the waters were made sweet. And would you believe that these 19th century travelers, geological surveys of the Royal Survey for Palestine, tried to find out how a piece of wood could make salt water sweet? They tried everything they could. They tried everything they could think of. And they analyzed the wood. They analyzed the water. They racked their brains and finally decided it had to be a divine miracle. Would you believe that? So when Moses cast that into the water, the waters were made sweet, and the people could drink the water, and their sheep could drink the water. And the very next time they had a problem, they again accused Moses of taking them out into the desert to kill them of thirst. That sounds like any people that you know. And so the waters were made sweet, but just for them, because these 19th century travelers said that the waters were every bit as bitter as they had been for the Egyptians. So it's very soon reverted to what it was. And there he made for them a statute and an ordinance. And there he proved them. Now, God brought them out of Egypt. God led them through the Red Sea. God provided them with light by night and shade by day. By day they could rest under the shade of the cloud, cook their food, sleep. Nighttime they could travel. And why didn't he do that all the way through their desert travel? Does God always take you through life with no problems? Sometimes he makes everything go your way. Sometimes nothing goes your way. Try to find out why. He tells us here why he took them to this salt spring. There he proved them. He did not prove them to himself. He did not prove them to see if they would grumble. He knew indeed they would grumble. He took them there to prove to them what kind of people they were. You suppose God ever proves us that way by misfortune? Does he ever prove us to show us whether we will walk by faith or whether we will fail to trust him? I never heard the sermon, but one of the most challenging sermon titles that I ever heard was "The Fortune of Misfortune." And that's not an oxymoron. For by our misfortunes we come to know ourselves. We come to know our need to trust him. There he made for them a statute and an ordinance, and there he proved them. And he said, "If thou wilt diligently hearken to the voice of the Lord thy God, and if thou wilt do that which is right in his sight, and wilt give ear to his commandments, and keep his statutes, I will put none of those diseases upon thee which I brought upon the Egyptians." Brother Doug likes to match up Old Testament scriptures with New Testament scriptures. Did you ever read in the New Testament how if you would walk with God, you would avert many of the sorrows of life that he has not planned for you, but that you would make for yourself? So if we walk after the Spirit, we'll not fulfill the lust of the flesh, and the lust of the flesh is what brings a lot of sorrow and headache unneeded upon us. If thou wilt diligently hearken to the voice of the Lord thy God, and will do that which is right in his sight, and will give ear to his commandments, and keep all his statutes, I will put none of these diseases upon thee. None of these diseases. He's speaking of particular diseases. And it's a very interesting word, diseases. For he defines what he's speaking of. I will put none of these diseases upon thee, which I have brought upon the Egyptians. What did he bring upon the Egyptians? We wouldn't normally call them diseases. He brought hail. He brought frogs. He brought lice. Well, you know the 10 plagues of Egypt that he brought upon them, upon the Egyptians, that is. Most of them Israel was exempt from. But they saw the effects of those plagues. So we would say he would put none of those plagues upon us. But of course, plagues has to do with health too. And I took the trouble to consult Mr. Webster in my unabridged dictionary, and the first definition that he gives for disease is uneasiness, which was the original meaning of the word dis-ease, uneasiness, or disturbance of mind or heart. But it also means health matters too. So then we read here, I will put none of these diseases upon thee, which I have brought upon the Egyptians, for I am the Lord that healeth thee. Now I've heard this scripture used to say that we, on the basis of this scripture, as well as some others, have a right to demand healing from God. The human being, the creature, has no right to demand anything of the sovereign of the universe. And everything that we get is by His grace. The breath that we draw is by His grace. But He didn't define, this preacher that I'm referring to did not define what kind of diseases he's talking about. These diseases that came upon Egypt were brought because of obstinate, not just disobedience, but obstinate rebellion against Israel's God. But he says, I am the Lord that healeth thee. He healed the waters of that brine lake. If he can heal the waters of a brine lake, he can heal anything wrong with us. And so the Lord healed the lake, and he revealed himself to them as Jehovah Rapha, the Lord, the healer. And he is. He can heal the waters of a lake. He can heal disturbances of the mind. He can heal any disease that afflicts us. He can and does. But why doesn't he always? Because he is proving us. And he is proving us not to see how far we can fail, as he did the Israelites, but to prove to us we don't have to fail him. We really believe him and follow after him. So they learned their God was not only the Lord who could provide, he was the Lord who heals, Jehovah Rapha. Now let's read the last verse in this chapter. And they came to Elim, where were 12 wells of water and 70 palm trees, and they camped there by the waters. And that oasis is still there in the Sinai Peninsula to this day. There were 12 wells of water, enough for the 12 tribes of Israel and their flocks. And there were 10 palm trees. Now those palm trees don't give a lot of shade, mainly because all the branches are on the crown, and the crowns are usually so high from the ground. But when you get a number of palm trees together, it can give quite a little shade. I remember one of my trips to Mexico with a professional group. We had a banquet out in the open among a grove of palm trees. They were growing closely together. And we only had dappled light. It was very pleasant. But not only was it a pleasant oasis for them, in that day, And as a general rule today, the only palm trees in Syria, Palestine, and the surrounding countries are date palms. So they had dates to add to their diet as a dessert. You think they deserved it after grumbling like that? God doesn't give us what we deserve. He gives us what we need because He loves us. So they encamped there by the waters, and Elam is just 15 miles farther on their journey than Mara. They didn't know that. They didn't know this country. Moses did. He knew that country because he had fed sheep all over that peninsula for 40 years. And certainly God knew it. But they stopped just short because they had made their daily trek, another half day's journey, and they would have skipped Mara and gone to Elam. How often do we stop short of God's blessings? When with a little more trusting, we might find an oasis in life.